Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. I'm Cody, and shortly Randy and Neil are going to be here to talk about the Camargo Club, located outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. The Camargo Club is a 1927 Seth Rayner design that features quite arguably the best collection of par threes anywhere in the world. It also includes what you would expect from any other Rayner designs, templates such as Redan, Eden, Short, and Biarritz. The Camargo Club is one of Seth Rayner's last designs that he did before he passed away at the young age of 44. Construction on the club actually didn't end until a year following his death. The golf course has relatively stayed the same since 1927, with minor changes happening to the golf course in the 80s, such as changing bunker shapes and the faces of the majority of them throughout the golf course. By the turn of the millennium, Tom Doak and the Renaissance golf team was brought in by the club to return the bunkers and bunker faces to their original Rayner design. The golf club itself is the best golf course in the state of Ohio, routinely receiving rankings in the top 50 not only in the United States or North America, but also on the majority of world ranking lists. As always, the Crash Course Podcast and Crash Course Video Series is presented by Cooper Tires. And since Randy's coming on the podcast today to talk about Camargo with Neil, I want to talk a little bit about Big Randy's game. You know those little bump shots that he hits from just off the green? That hybrid might seem like an obvious idea now. Who wouldn't want the best part of a long iron and fairway wood mixed together? But before the first hybrid clubs went on the market 20 years ago, someone had to invent that. And that's what Cooper has done with its new Discoverer Rugged Trek truck tire. Combining the improved grip and aggressive look of an off-road tire with a smooth, quiet ride of a road tire, the Rugged Trek is a hybrid that gives you the best of both worlds. It's an invention so good that in another 20 years, it'll seem just as obvious. All Cooper tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by treadwear mileage warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca. And remember, go with the Coopers.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Randy. I am joined today by the merch czar, Neil Schuster. Neil, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, big guy. It's good to be here with you. In person, sitting across the table, we're going to chop it up about some Cincy golf.
The strap boys are going to get deep on some ultimate C-suite Cincinnati country clubs. And the first one today is...
Well, if the strap boys can get a hookup anywhere, it's got to be in the big guy's hometown.
Exactly.
And, you know, the franchise. My dad, he's a Cincy guy. He's a St. X bomber. So I'm kind of a bastard bomber, I guess.
You know, once somebody in your family's a bomber, I think everybody's a bomber.
I've got some solid knowledge of Cincy, visiting grandparents at least every year, twice a year. You know, I think that's I think my bona fides in Cincy are pretty solid.
A lot of people would call their town or city parochial. I would put Cincinnati up there with any of them. In terms of the most parochial.
Where'd you go to high school?
Exactly. First question.
First question you're going to get. Where'd you go to high school, Randy?
So it's funny. Your dad went to high school in Cincinnati. My dad and mother moved to Cincinnati after college, so they did not attend high school in Cincinnati. Now, as a second-generation Cincinnatian myself, I can now answer that question. I went to Marymount High School, a public school, so I did not get in the... You know, the big Catholic private school scene, but of course,
don't bury the lead though. You did grow up at a country club.
I did. That's another podcast though. We are here today to talk about the Camargo Club. I think most people listening maybe would have heard of it. It's ranked consistently.
Number 52 in the world rankings.
I was going to say, as one of the best courses, not only in the country, but in the world.
Yeah, and one of the more interesting names, which I think we'll get to. Found a couple of good sources for this pod. Usually like to start with some history. So, Randy, what do you know, being from Cincy?
Well, let's dive in. I think, first of all, we need to talk about where is...
Good point. Let's locate the audience.
Of course, it's in Cincinnati. More specifically, it's in the posh Tony suburb of Indian Hill, which I have many thoughts about. Indian Hill was our main rival at Marymount High School. They were the Indian Hill Braves, and we didn't like them, period, point blank. There used to be a saying, I think it's been lost to our more sensible political times, but it used to be the rallying cry was kill the hill, which doesn't stand up in today's climate.
And the hill is what, northeast of town?
That is correct. More east.
Okay.
More east, a little north.
And the split with Cincy is what? East side is posh and Tony, and west side's what?
Well, I don't want to say it like that, but there is a stereotypical difference. I think the east side has more of a white collar, blue blood reputation. And really the dividing line, for all intents and purposes, is you can kind of think about it I-75. And then the west side, I think it's more of a blue-collar reputation.
So that I-70 corridor is firmly in the blue blood part of town.
The I-71 corridor.
71, excuse me.
Yeah.
Up the northeast side.
That's running up through Hyde Park, Oakley, Kenwood, close to Madeira. That's the heart of the east side of Cincinnati.
Where does the FT fall into all this? Finneytown.
Well, so Finneytown's interesting. It's kind of in that middle area.
Funky town.
Yeah. I think technically it's on the east side, but it's close enough to that, you know, that invisible.
That's the borderline
dividing line where you get west of Finneytown and you can consider yourself creeping into the west side. The heart of the west side, though, is over like Delhi, Western Hills, that's really the core, and that's more I-74, that I-74 corridor.
Shout out to your brother-in-law.
Exactly.
Where's Goodbar from?
He's from Harrison, which is the furthest edge, almost bordering Indiana, but he's a St. X guy.
Yes.
Came all the way to St. X High School.
Which is kind of, it's in Finneytown, right?
I think so. Can I admit something? What? I have never been on the campus of St. Xavier High School.
Really?
Yeah. If you dropped me in Cincinnati today... I'm 37 years old. I could not drive to St. Xavier High School.
Wow.
Yeah. I know where Moeller is. I've passed Moeller thousands and thousands of times. It's in Kenwood. I've never been to the campus of Elder. That's kind of like
the snake pit?
Just the pit.
The pit.
Yeah. They're the Panthers.
Yeah.
And then LaSalle is the other big one. That's Elder and LaSalle are more west side. St. X and Moeller are east side.
God, I played football with some St. X boys in college. Shout out to Ross and Evan E. Mills. God, if I hear that fight song, from the east to the west, we are the dude.
It's
the Bombers are easy to make fun of, so you gotta take a couple of low blows on them when you can.
I mean, good for them. I think all those, they have a lot of pride in their high school.
Of course, and they should.
So, funny enough, I said I went to Marymount High School, and actually where I grew up, in a little subdivision right outside of the village proper of Marymount. I grew up, I would say, no more than 5 miles, probably less, 2-3 miles as the crow flies from the Camargo Club. Drove by it countless times growing up. Never knew its significance in the golf world. Architecturally, would never have guessed it was a top 50 course in the world. And honestly, never thought I'd play it. Never thought I'd play it either.
So with that note, it extremely private.
Extremely private, extremely posh.
Is the important to them? The Ohio State, the Camargo Club?
Not on a level with Ohio State, no. I think it's more just Camargo.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will say this for them. It's a family money, understated exclusivity and niceness. Like there's nothing new money or flashy about the Camargo Club. which I think is to their credit.
Yeah, definitely.
That's more of the vibe I like.
And I played last summer. I felt it was an understated entrance. Everything about it was kind of understated.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the history a little bit. I actually found an awesome source. I think that it was like a Prezi presentation. Google's wild, man. You know, you search like the Camargo Club history, and I got like this awesome presentation that popped up by Haley Vincent from 2018. So the club was formed in 1925. The Camargo Club was initially developed to provide an alternate golfing facility along with a fox hunting ground and polo complex for the landlocked Cincinnati Country Club. Randy, tell me about the Cincinnati Country Club.
So let me just first of all say, of course.
Yeah.
Of course you need some fox hunting and polo grounds. So the Cincinnati Country Club, I have intimate experience there. It is a real blue blood located in the heart of East Hyde Park, or actually more almost like Walnut Hills, East Walnut Hills, right in O'Brienville in Cincinnati. And I worked there for a couple of years in the bag room in college.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Good tips over there?
Some people not so good tips. You know, like any club, you quickly learn who you like to see walking sure. towards you and who you know, oh, yeah, no, I'm busy cleaning clubs. I can't grab that bag. But awesome experience. I loved those summers working there at Cincinnati Country Club. I will say I still cannot believe they allowed us lonely bag people. We got full playing privileges on days we weren't working. So it wasn't even limited to Mondays. We could go out there on a Friday afternoon if we weren't working and
but
play golf.
Would like landlocked be a good description of the course and the facility?
Of course. It's squeezed in amongst – it's all residential around there. There's no room to expand. It's really enough land for like 15 good holes, but they put 18 in there. So I can understand why the Camargo members were looking to spread their wings. And like I said, honestly, you know, go fox hunting and play some polo as well. Perfect place to do it up in Indian Hill.
Sounds like we're also bearing the lead. I mean, it's a Seth Rayner course.
Seth Rayner, who, you know, I think – I don't know anybody that doesn't like Seth Rayner. I think, you know, he's obviously known for the templates. It's a lot of template holes that are carried over from the British Isles. He and C.B. McDonald. And, yeah, the Camargo is one of, I think, his most important lasting designs here in the United States.
Well, so a couple more things from Haley Vincent's Prezi. Rayner designed the course, but he never got back to see its completion.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it wasn't like a Donald Ross, like, hey, you know, show up and you guys should do this, this, and this, and I'm out of here. It was like he, you know, surveyed it, laid it out, but just didn't.
I think he passed away.
Yeah, he didn't get back to it.
Yeah.
And then a trivia question for you, Randy. Why is Camargo laid out to be played clockwise?
That's first of all, I didn't know it was laid out like that. Second of all, I have no idea.
Rayner disliked counterclockwise layouts. He lost a second amateur. This is from Haley Vincent's Prezi. I'm guessing that's U.S. amateur on a counterclockwise course by pumping multiple balls OB on the right side. Pumping is my word. And what does this tell us?
It tells us he had the big right miss.
Thank you. How about that? Rayner had a big right miss. That's awesome. I never knew that.
Rayner and the kid. Two peas in a pod.
Late in his life, he was like, you know, F this. We're going clockwise, man. I need the ball. I need to be able to miss on the right side of the golf course. And the more I think about it, going back to playing it last summer, like, yeah, like a lot of the dog legs, you know, number two, big dog leg right. Number, I want to say like 13 around this tree, big dog leg right. So that was pretty cool. And then I think, you know, Camargo is such a unique name. And that's one other thing I want to bring up from this presentation I looked at. The Camargo name, there's three theories on where the name come from.
Okay.
The first, some suggest that the Camargo name was derived from Marie Anne de Coupes de Camargo. Marie was an 18th century French ballerina who was famous for being the first to lead about athletically in heelless shoes and to wear a short skirt that didn't touch the floor. And she looks like she was some kind of mistress that was in the Cincinnati area. That's theory one.
Let me just say, that's going to be tough to beat in my power rankings.
Theory two. Another theory is that the club was named after Julius Fleischmann's yacht. Fleischmann's magnificent yacht was 225 feet long, displaced 968 tons, drew 12 feet, and was powered by two mammoth Bessemer diesels.
Nice boat, sir. Son, that's a yacht.
I wonder if that was on the Ohio River.
Yeah, probably. Where else are you going to take it?
And theory three, the most plausible theory, is that the realty company and club drew their names from Camargo Pike, which had been named for the place to which it originally led, the Claremont County town of Camargo.
I can report I know of no current town over in Claremont named Camargo. So if that is, it's gone by the wayside, but that's interesting.
And I would say that Camargo, one of the things it has going for it is the uniqueness of the name. It sticks out to you. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear it and you're like, I wonder what that place is like. You know, it kind of has that, it grabs my attention, I guess. Sure.
I got three other things for you while we're on.
Hit me.
And then we can dive into the course. One, it doesn't receive a lot of play. And I think that speaks to the exclusivity. I read somewhere around, they estimate 12, 13,000 rounds a year, which for a course that's one of the best 50 or so in the world, that's a small number. Two, it has, for as long as I can remember, it's been a qualifying site for the USAM. And so that was always that was the ace up my sleeve forever growing up, was like, if I can't ever get on Camargo, I'm just gonna have to fudge my handicap, sign up for the local qualifying, and you get a practice round and the competition, and then I'm sure they'd boot me from USGA competitions forever after
the nuclear
that.
Option.
Exactly. And then third, a little local lore. I don't know if it's true or not, but the rumor I always heard was Carl Lindner, who was famous for, if Cincinnati folks will for sure know, the UDF, United Dairy Farmers, among other things, billionaire, one of the leading families in the city of Cincinnati, former owner of the Reds. Legend had it, he wanted to get into Camargo Club, and they wouldn't let him. And so now, as anybody that drives to the club, you'll see a gated driveway and a huge expanse of land. Well, Carl bought all the land right by the Camargo Club. And I think as a way to like, hey, if you guys ever need to expand or if you ever need to, you know, develop more land, I'm going to make it a real pain for you guys. So what I always heard was because Lindner couldn't get into the Camargo Club, he bought up as much land right next to it.
Hell yeah.
And that's where
nothing like some petty billionaires, baby.
But that speaks to the exclusivity that, you know, this guy who was kind of new money in the 20th century.
Sorry, bud.
Sorry. You know, maybe you get on the wait list like some other folks. But they're not really looking for new members.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get into... I think we kind of touched upon this, who can play there. Extremely limited to members and their guests and U.S. Open qualifiers.
Yeah. One thing I would say on that point, and this is more of a discussion question for you, it has the no tee time vibe, where when I came,
right.
It was it's kind of like just we rolled up to the first tee, we had our foursome, and I'm curious what you think of it. Like, I kind of found it stressful.
It is.
Where it's like...
A little bit.
Hey, who's going? Yeah, hey, you know, it just feels like it's almost like promoted as like, oh God, it's so chill around here. Like, there's
what's the cliche, you know, place you can always find a game.
Yeah, but it's also like, well, wait a second, like, you know, it kind of just leads to like maybe people passive aggression. I don't know. It was just like, wait, you know, I got it. You take it a little bit.
I think my ideal mix would be a hybrid where Monday through Friday, maybe Friday afternoon you need tee times, but Monday through Friday, no tee times. And then like Saturday morning, at least Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I think a little bit more structure. So I know what time I'm going off.
Yeah. I mean, I get when it doesn't get a ton of play, like it probably isn't an issue, but just for me, I was like, you know, I'm already on eggshells. Like, I don't want to.
Right. You don't want to put.
I'm going to break anything.
A bad step forward or anything.
Yeah. So, but the course, par 70, I believe around 6,700 yards. Is that?
Yeah, it's not a long course.
Yeah.
That's all these country clubs. There are a couple exceptions, but yeah, most of them they're not that long.
Yeah, and I want to shout out an old friend of the boys, Mike Mascara, former assistant superintendent at Sweetens Cove, now working at Camargo. So hopefully he's enjoying Cincinnati, but you know, awesome. He helped us out with the birdhouse too. Like, can't speak more highly of Mike. So I'm happy to see him land up there at, you know, such a well-renowned place, and hopefully he's doing well. But I think that speaks to like I played it on the day they had just aerated the greens. So that clouds my.
And for the folks listening, you and I have both played it once.
One time.
So we're not.
Perfect, beautiful bluebird day in September of last year. But they had punched the greens, I think, a day or two before that. So I got a real sense of like the course. Nobody else was out there, which was great. So, you know, very, very laid back round. But it almost felt like going to a water park and, you know, some of the slides were closed, right? Like, because some of the features, I think that really stuck out to me is, you know, it's some big, bold, brash Rainer stuff that you know, we can get into a little bit. But I kept thinking, like, oh, my God, like, I would be totally boned in this spot. But because they punched the greens, I'm not. So
that's a good segue. Let's get into the course a little bit. I think. You know, I don't know where you want to start, but I'll just say this. I played September fall of 2019, and it was in the remnants of a hurricane that had come up through the Gulf, and, you know, the tail end was over... Some outer bands over the Midwest. So it was very wet. When we teed off, it... You know, just a very light drizzle. Most of the round was fine. And then, like, the last four or five holes, we just downpour. One of the more wet experiences I've had on the golf course. But credit to the guys I was playing with. They're great sports. We all walked. It's a walking course. And so that's where I want to start. I think most people walk it.
And hilly.
And it is hilly.
I found it to be a pretty hard walk, which I didn't expect. You know, some of the and that plays into the architecture too. You know, like that second hole, you're hitting over a ravine on the tee shot. There's just a lot of up and downs throughout the front nine specifically.
It's very rolling land. I always felt you just feel removed from the world. It's not tree line or it's not lined with houses. It's just purely kind of out in the wilderness, and it's a lovely walk. I think we can get into some individual holes, but you mentioned the greens. I just want to say that's the other thing that struck me about Camargo. The greens are massive.
Yeah.
And I think they make for you almost get a false sense of like, hey, I'm hitting the ball well. I'm hitting all these greens. But it's like, well, they're huge.
Yeah.
And it's going to leave you with some very long putts. And that's the times we played it when the greens are a little slower. You don't get penalized for leaving your ball in some bad places as much.
Yeah.
And so we again, I keep saying we can go into it, but I found it a little easier than it should have been just because the greens were slow. Yes. That's the main defense.
The main defense. I would also, the one theme that stuck out to me, I was just, I was blown away by the scale of the par threes. So all, I think at least three of the four had these just crazy fall offs, right? Like, so the one on the front nine, and the number 11, it's just like, it's like a volcano, you know, like on all sides. Like, man, if you miss that green, you are like, you're literally 20 feet down.
So I want to jump in. The architecture nerds will point out that the volcano is a template, but it's not a volcano hole.
Is that the short then, number 11?
It is the short.
Yeah.
But it's severe green and it does fall
good
off.
Good point. I was using that as a description, not exactly. Not as a template.
Exactly.
But thank you for that.
But I think that's, you know, people much smarter and well-versed in architecture than myself. You know, the four par threes are among the best collection of par threes of any course in the world.
Yeah.
And template-wise, you have the aforementioned short, you have an Eden, you have a Biarritz, and then you have a Redan. And they are spectacular.
I was gonna, you know, when we get into the favorite holes, I guess we go there now. I mean, for me, it was 15, the Redan.
Great minds, bud. That's what I put down.
And so I've played a few Rainers, not a lot of them, but for me, it's top. It'd be very hard to find a more one that is more not what's the word? Not overwhelming, but like the scale of it's like whoa. Yeah. I think it's Country Club of Charleston, number 11, has a reverse Redan, so I guess that's a different category. But that one's just, like, unbelievable. And then Piping Rock has number 3 is, like, whoa. Like maybe has Camargo beat, but then Camargo number 15 is like, it's outrageous, like period. And I missed it long right, and thank God the greens were
slow
because, yeah. I mean, I was screwed. That would have been chip up, and then I'd be in the front bunker. I mean, it's a double bogey, automatic double bogey if you miss the green, basically. So that hole kind of tickled me. It was cool, you know what I mean?
It's a great example of the Redan. It's about 190 yards from the back tees. So depending, you know, if you're one up, it's maybe 170 to 190. So you're hitting a decent iron into it. For anybody that doesn't know the Redan, it's you can imagine kind of a green that's more elongated from right to left, and that right side is canted up to where, you know, when they put the pin on that left side, the only way to get close to that pin is to land it up on the slope on the right side and just let the ball release down to the hole.
But if you don't get it there, there's a massive false front.
Correct.
So you're rolling off the front of the green.
And if you go long,
which is honestly, the more you think about it, like that is kind of the miss.
Right.
It's like, just don't get it there. And then you can basically play that same idea with a chip shot.
And I've always been curious. I'm trying to think back. I don't have a strong enough mental picture, but what if you miss left there and you're chipping almost back into the slope?
I remember it being...
I don't think anybody does miss left because everybody wants to play the kicker.
Yeah, but it's also like it's almost like very... It's a small landing area over there. Like right. You're either going to get caught in that front bunker, or it almost felt like there was a ravine over there, or it like dropped... You know, it wasn't...
Yeah,
it wasn't. You didn't really want to be comfy over there, right?
Right.
Like that just... That wasn't in your mind. Like you'd have to miss it like 30 yards because you're aiming right at the kicker, which right, you know, is probably like 30 yards away from the left side of the green.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, we're on the same page there. I think the par threes almost overshadow, like there are certain features that stand out on the rest of the course, but from tee to green, I don't really remember that many holes necessarily.
I have two other holes that stuck out to me. I think it was 13, dogleg right, par 4, with one like tree on the corner, and then
a crazy big green.
Yes, yeah. And like trouble all down the right.
They're all big,
but kind of this dogleg or like with this lone tree kind of framing, then like heather grass on the right, and I don't know, it just looked really, really good. It was like, it kind of almost felt like it was in the middle of the polo cape.
I think that's the cape.
I like that one. And then 16 had those mounds in front of the green.
Yeah.
Like guarding, you know, like a blind, it was like a blind shot into the green. And it wasn't the punch bowl.
Wasn't the Alps punch bowl. That's earlier.
Yeah. But it was, I thought that hole just looked really,
yeah,
like really pretty.
There's a short par 4 on the front. That's like maybe 300 yards, kind of a slender fairway, with it's kind of uphill with a drop off on the right. I don't know what that template is, whether that's there are aspects of holes I remember, but the par threes are like, yeah, you can kind of almost picture every par three after you play it.
They stick with you for sure. It's always kind of nice when the consensus on a place, like it lives up to the consensus, right? Like you probably heard like, oh, the par threes at Camargo are awesome. Well, guess what? I felt the same way.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason they have that reputation.
What'd you shoot, Randy?
I shot, believe it or not, I shot a very smooth 77.
Bud, I shot a 74.
Really?
Yeah. One of my best rounds of the year last year. And it's an asterisk for sure, because it's like your boy hit the green a lot, and the putt, I could just like hammer putts.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think, one, it's a very comfortable course off the tee. There aren't like forced carries. There aren't really hazards unless you completely spray a ball. So it's quite comfy. The greens are huge, so it's not like it's difficult to hit the green. It's just a matter of how close to the pin you are. And yeah, like we said, we played it when the greens were slow, which fed into that. I think it's a type of course that it's easier to shoot a pretty good score, and I think it's really difficult to shoot a great score.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Which is kind of the best of the best classical designs. You know, like that was McKenzie's whole philosophy. You know, we don't want to beat up, your middling to bad golfers, right? We want them to have a good time. But it's going to be difficult to really
if you want to roll in a bunch of birdies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get the ball close depending on where the pin is.
So I think when they do the USAMs, I mean, it's maybe one or two under gets through. But the greens are lightning fast, and it's like if you're not putting the ball in proper spots, you're going to take a lot of putts.
Any parting thoughts?
What's one thing you'll remember about the course?
I mean, we've mentioned the par threes. I think you nailed it earlier with the, you feel like you're out there all alone. So, you know, like it or not, there are some real awesome qualities to an exclusive golf course.
Of course.
For the people that are members. Like, how nice would it be to go out there on a Tuesday and just know, like, you just roll up to the tee and, you know.
I can play in
that. Would be sweet.
Three and a half hours.
And that's great. So it's, you know, you could disagree with me on if that's a good thing for golf or not, but, like, for the people that have it, it's like, hey, man, you know what? That's cool, man.
Yeah. I said the same thing I had written down, the exclusivity in the par threes. or what I'll remember.
All right. Good stuff, man.
All right. Well, hopefully people are listening. Hopefully you have a chance to play Camargo.
Hopefully people are listening. We're not just
and
just me and you talking, bud.
Yeah, exactly. And if not, you know, you can always exercise the nuclear option. Sign up for that USAM qualifier.
You're a bad guy, Randy.
All right. Cheers.